Hi, this is Kirby Shibaga.
And this is Vinay on behalf of Nirav and Steven. Welcome to XRC Pod. Well, it's that time of the year where we look back and reflect, as well as look forward to the opportunities. In this episode, we talk about industry trends and predictions, as well as the current state of the industry, lessons learned, and how to read insight data, as well as what to look forward to in 2021. And to that, we go to the source. Our guest today is Stephanie Yamas, Head of Research and Strategy, Games and XR at Super Data, a Nielsen company. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's such a pleasure. I know so much of us here in the industry have looked to your insights as well as Super Data's reports in both informing and being retrospective and looking back at what's going on. So we're super excited to have this conversation today.
Awesome. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Well, usually our first questions are actually not about XR, and so we'll continue that trend. So I wanted to first of all congratulate you on expecting your first child in February, and also a huge move from New York, all that kind of good stuff. So the question is, what has been your most interesting craving?
So thank you, first of all, for the congratulations. It's been an interesting pregnancy for sure. And one of those interesting things has definitely been cravings. And I think the one that stands out is I've revisited my palette of childhood with cereal. So I think Captain Crunch is like a staple in my kitchen right now.
Oh, wow. How's the roof of your mouth?
It's like, it's nostalgic, if I could describe it as anything. It's like, you kind of look past those things because when you were 10 years old, you didn't care about it messing up the roof of your mouth. And I've been trying the different flavors too. Like they have the peanut butter one and all berries. And it's just not something, I didn't eat cereal before I was pregnant. And now I get these huge cravings for Captain Crunch. And I've tried a couple other ones too, like Boo Berry and I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, but you know, marshmallow, anything with marshmallows, just it's hopefully so, it'll go away because this is too much sugar for sure. Yeah.
Is Lucky Charms on the list then?
Yeah, that was one of them for sure.
What do you think is your favorite marshmallow cereal, and what is it about? What makes a good marshmallow cereal?
Oh, good question. I think it has to be balanced with something that's not sweet. So I think that's why Lucky Charms works, because it's like, you know, Cheerios or something with it, that it kind of like balances it out. Cause too much marshmallow is too much, you know, like you gotta have a balance. It's kind of like with the Captain Crunch, you know, recipe, like the traditional recipe works best because it's balanced. But if you do all berries, it's too many berries. It's too much of the same sweetness. So I feel like,
that
you
was
know,
deep.
Yeah. If you take anything from this episode, that's what you should take from it.
Wow. I love food. And I love, actually, I absolutely love cereal. So I'm sure, you know, we could talk about this at length. What about you, Kirby? What is your go-to cereal you had to have a cereal craving?
Man. Put me on the spot. I was gonna mention my favorite craving overall.
Let's go there.
Favorite craving. So I'm a Canuck, and I really miss having authentic poutine. So
really,
yeah. Ooh, that's so good. You know, you've had. Does everyone know what that is?
Many of us have, but we have folks that are listening to the world, so want to maybe explain what that is.
Sure. So it's French fries with cheese curds, squeaky cheese curds from a special place in the province of Quebec, and gravy on top. And it is so good. That's what I really miss.
I think when I was, before I was pregnant and I could like drink alcohol, that made more sense to me. You know, it's like a post-drinking meal.
Oh yes, yeah. That's like the ultimate comfort food, and so Canadian because it's so warm and it's all real food together, so which is pretty awesome. You know, going to your kind of comment, Stephanie, on cereal, I've kind of discovered. So I love food in general. I think I can talk about it for way too long, but Magic Spoon cereal has been my go-to cereal for kind of the healthier version, and it has a lot of flavors that that kind of mimic our childhood cereal flavors. So like it's a very, if you're looking for kind of that transition craving into a very, very low sugar cereal. Like that's been pretty good. And I think during kind of the pandemic, your cravings start to kind of go to the next level, and cereal has yeah. been definitely, it's the sweet, it's the crunch and that balance, right? When it comes to the that savoriness as well. So I definitely, it's something we could definitely relate to.
Augmented cereal. That's what we need.
Yeah.
I'm surprised these boxes don't have more, any sort of augmented kind of QR code, like AR experience in the back of the box, right?
Yeah,
like
that's true.
Yeah, that's definitely next level. But enough about food. Stephanie, that's such a diverse background. You've done so much. You're a mentor, advisor, and you know, you're leading up research as well. How did you get into research, and how did your past experiences prepare you for today?
It was sort of by accident. I used to work in marketing and marketing and social media in particular, and decided I wanted to get a master's to kind of learn some new things. And I went to NYU, which has a really great sort of video game culture in their academic circle there. So I found an advisor who focused on video games. I've been a gamer for as long as I can remember. And, you know, once I saw that you could actually like study games academically, I got really excited. And so I started to research video games. I had a kind of a weird slant on video games when I was in academia. I studied like extremism and extremist groups and how they were using video games, which was interesting, but heavy. So I think after a little while, it was like, okay, I could go into academia and I could keep doing this. And it's kind of, you know, it's a heavy subject, or I could see what else is out there. And if I, you know, want to come back, I'll come back. And so the former CEO of Superdata, Joost van Jurnen, he was a professor at NYU. And I kind of, you know, stumbled upon his company and saw I could do market research on video games. And I felt like that was, you know, an interesting next step. So I gave it a shot, and I'm still here at Superdata. And I think what was great about being part of a startup and the startup culture that Joost and, you know, leadership there kind of fostered was the ability to act on what you saw as a future opportunity. And XR in 2015, 2014, you know, we're kind of eyeing it, thought, this is really interesting. There's this Kickstarter of this new, you know, headset that's really interesting. Why are so many people getting involved? This must be, you know, something that we should pay attention to. And they kind of let me go with it. So I got very lucky. And in 2015, we put out our first report, which always makes me laugh when I read it now, because it's just, things are so different now than what we thought back then.
Yeah.
But definitely in a good way. And I just, ever since then, have been, you know, kind of working toward pushing the industry forward, researching, you know, games, but leaning more and more heavily toward XR, because I just think games is, of course, like a super amazing, you know, form of media that's really transformative and will transform a lot of other media. But XR is like its own thing. Like, it's just, it's its own beast. I think, you know, like, I've likened it before in the past to like color TV as being like a way to not just sort of change the way that we consume media, but like change the land, like disrupt the landscape completely. So yeah, that's how I got here.
That's awesome. I love kind of the game story. There's so many of us that have a passion for games, and even your example, you know, games is something that kind of crosses so many different groups of people as well. I do remember that first first report in 2015. I think, in fact, that's actually, I believe, how we connected. We're on one of those mini calls where everyone's trying to get whatever industry data they can find. And at the time, I was with Vive, so we're one of the few companies that actually had any sort of data you could baseline off of. And I remember your reports. Now, there were so many overly inflated reports, and if you were in the industry at the time building, then it just didn't quite add up. But I remember something about Superdata is that you were able to really quantify your assumptions and kind of place the trends back into something that was a little more relatable. and I think that really kind of sets you guys apart. You, Super Data really emerged from the pack early on in the industry, and you've been a strong presence in that. Like, what set you guys apart, and what have you learned since those early times in 2015?
You know, I think we've evolved and kind of stuck to our guns and others, and we've always tried to be the realistic point of view of the industry, which is not always the most popular point of view. You know, especially I think now it's better, but certainly in the beginning, you know, you had a lot of people who wanted us to project VR being like hundreds of billions of dollars by 2018 or 2019 or 2020. And we wanted to base it on evidence, you know, and we do have a number of academics on the team. And when you're in academia, I mean, you're really held to your evidence. And so, you know, we're media scholars. So looking back at the different, you know, forms of media that have come about and their growth trajectory, one thing that we did early on was kind of compare and kind of overlay adoption rates across different types of media in the past, you know, in the past century. And so there are patterns. And I think that we've seen that pattern in VR and XR in general. And we need to trust in that pattern because there are a lot of variables that do align themselves with it. You know, and it could take different twists and turns. And I think we have to be okay with that too. You know, I think a lot of times you want to say, you know, the industry is going to do something. And I always, you know, as an analyst, want to caveat that with the fact that I'm not prescient and I'm doing everything I can with the data that I have. But I'm very data focused and I'm very evidence focused. And so is our team at Super Data. And so we've just always wanted to feel like our estimates are grounded in fact. And that's something that we've kind of learned over the years. And so, you know, certainly our assumptions have changed over time. You know, we've had moments of optimism. We've had moments of skepticism, you know, and I think where we are now, what's good is that we didn't overpredict, I think, in a lot of ways, because we could never have imagined COVID and how that would disrupt the industry. So being able to be cautious up front, it gave us a little bit of more wiggle room now that we have this huge disruption in how XR is growing. That kind of, you know, it helps align with what we'd been predicting. So again, like I could never have imagined that this would happen. And, you know, that's why we want to be cautious in what we forecast for the future. But we also, you know, have a lot of data and we feel comfortable in that data and feel like a lot of what we put out there is aligned with it. And so we're comfortable with that. We're confident in that, which gives us, I think, a unique perspective on the industry.
Definitely being comfortable with data is can get uncomfortable when the industry is in such a growth type of phase or early growth type of phase, because oftentimes we're looking for those reports that want us to make us feel better. And so that can be a bit of a challenge. But understanding this data can also be a bit of a challenge, especially when you look at 2020. I know in terms of some of the reports that you've published, kind of an interesting take on 2020. So there was, you know, a projection to reach $915 million in 2020, which was actually down from 2019's total of $1 billion. But you revised that up from a prior estimate of $830 million for the industry. A couple of questions there. What does that really mean for 2020? Is that a good thing? What are you seeing in terms of, is that still positive growth? And how healthy do you think the XR industry is, even given some of the situation and climate of 2020?
I mean, I think right now any growth is positive growth, you know, considering the challenges that we've seen in different ways. And like, I think, you know, coming into the year, there was a lot of optimism, you know, with coming into COVID, there was a lot of optimism that like VR was going to transform meeting spaces and was going to really be like key to connecting people. And I think it's done that in some ways, but there's always the question of adoption. And I think until we saw like, you know, the new Oculus come out, people were a little bit guarded around their wallet, didn't know what the future was going to hold for them. you know, on a personal level and financially and with the economy and with everything going on, we had expected a little bit more of a boost in adoption before COVID. But with the new device, you know, I think Oculus has or the Quest 2 has like done gangbusters, and we're definitely seeing that in the demand that's there. And so that kind of gave us new hope in a lot of ways that, you know, the industry could push forward and kind of overcome this challenge and actually help people connect. And just all the content that we're seeing come out around it as well is huge. And so on a consumer level, you know, and I'm speaking consumer specific, that's really where we're kind of focused. But on a consumer level, that gave us renewed hope. A new device that just was hugely popular, really come and kind of make us see that people are still interested, you know, and still spending and still adopting, and looking for that escape. So maybe, you know, I don't think that it's going to be the transformative sort of like key to meeting spaces just yet. But I think in terms of like escapism and being able to find way, you know, now having more multiplayer opportunities, for instance, finding ways to be able to communicate with people when you can't physically be there, has given us the sort of push to revise and reflect on what we were predicting before.
Yeah, it's a great point about kind of some of the growth, especially now you're seeing kind of Quest 2 adoption at a time where, you know, people are thinking about their wallet, but you're seeing, you know, as a kind of head out there about the growth for Quest 2 adoption. What do you think makes Quest 2 so successful, and how do you feel that's going to spur the industry?
I think that the all-in-one headset was essential. We needed to ditch the wires, and being able to embrace that. You know, I think Facebook and Oculus have been able to really like hear what consumers wanted with the all-in-one and the computing power that goes behind that and the experience, the sort of like upgraded experience that we're seeing with the headset. It just kind of was a breath of fresh air to see like, okay, like we're going in this direction where you don't need a high power PC. Like that was really the key. And I think we saw that with the Quest. We saw that people had an appetite for that kind of headset. And we've seen, you know, like mobile kind of dwindle off. You know, I think console was interesting for a long time, but I think PlayStation has, you know, its own plans for the near term that eventually will include XR, but their focus isn't quite there as much. And I'm sure that it'll include some kind of all-in-one option, because that's what people are demanding. So the original Quest showed people who weren't VR adopters that there was something really cool out there that they could relate to and connect with. And the Quest 2 came in at the right price, at the right time, with the right specs and the right, you know, interface. So I think that's really a lot of what people have been looking for, and that's why it's been doing so well.
Man, this is really interesting. So when you mentioned, you know, there's, especially because of COVID, there's a lot of folks that are very, you know, unsure. There's so much uncertainty about our futures financially, you know, is a big question, right? Like, do you want to open your wallet for a new device? And I was kind of thinking along the lines of, you know, the cell phone industry. When cell phones first came out, they're really expensive. It's a little bit different in that they needed the, you know, the backbone, the telcos to run the system on. But many people are really, really into this idea of just having a monthly fee for their cell phone. And I wonder, is there an opportunity for, you know, not necessarily Oculus, but other companies to say, let's make this a monthly fee, sort of like iPhone upgrade program kind of idea. How has that shown up in your research? And how would that affect adoption, do you think?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure I've ever thought about it that way before, to be honest. I think that there's an affordability with VR devices that we still don't necessarily see with like newer mobile devices. So, you know, as long as these machines are coming in and are usable for a long period of time, I sort of see them akin to like consoles, like video game consoles. So, with the similar in price point, and as long as these can last, maybe not like the 7-8 year console cycle, but can last a few years, people I think will be willing to pay up front for headsets. But you know, that's not a bad idea. It's something that I definitely will give a good think to, because it's just something I've never really like imagined before. But it could be something that kind of changes people's perception of, yeah, of how they're going to spend their money around the hardware.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not just Oculus. Like, looking back, I have the Go, the first Quest, the second Quest, and things just end up collecting dust over time rather than being able to kind of do an upgrade with it. Or, you know, a higher end consumer product like the Index. I think a lot of people would love that headset, but you know, yeah, that's a little steep to get into for a lot of folks. So, yeah, there might, agreed, be an opportunity there for some type of platform or some kind of network to.
Yeah, there's so much to consider, right, in the industry, where everyone's kind of ripe for looking for monetization disruption models, just even making the headset bigger, or sorry, not bigger, but better, smaller, actually, literally the opposite, making it smaller and easy to use. There's so much talk around kind of that. And I think what you're kind of even alluding to is really that consumer market. I know that's in this show, we talk a lot about XR for enterprise, kind of more of those high use cases that are a little more technical in nature for more of a very specific audience. But with super data, and I think generally in the industry, we get excited about consumer data, right? What is the consumer doing? Because when we talk about scale, when we talk about revenue models, business opportunities, that's really where the ROI ends up kind of paying off, at least for medium to large size companies, especially for content creators. Why do you think the consumer data and games data matters to the overall XR industry?
It's really important when you're creating strategies around how you're going to grow a business to understand where that business is currently in the market and look to experts to understand where it is going in the future. Because if it's growing, for instance, like we saw a lot, you know, as we talked about earlier, a lot of inflated estimates early in the market. And that did a huge disservice, I think, to a lot of companies looking for funding and looking, you know, at what their growth potential could be, and finding the right data that tells you what that growth potential actually is and what consumers are looking toward. And you know, whether it's revenue data or whether it's, you know, more qualitative based data on consumer sentiment or things like that. It gives you an understanding of how your business is going to fit into the growth of that industry and how you're going to be able to service consumers. Because I know, you know, there are a lot of things that are really exciting to us, you know, in the industry, especially that we're so close to the industry. And that can give you a really myopic view that does yourself a disservice when trying to plan for a broader general consumer base. And what our goal really is here is getting this out to general consumers, is getting mass adoption. And, you know, just thinking about the XR consumer of today doesn't necessarily 100% help you do that, to really look to what people will respond to on a higher level, in the future. So data, you know, and getting a sense of what people want, the consumer journey, how they're getting to the type of content that they're getting to and why they're buying in the first place or why they're not buying, is hugely important to understand where your business is, if it's viable, and what that growth potential will be.
Definitely plus one to that. So just with all the data, with all the reports and kind of just even general thoughts, what would be your kind of very brief summary of 2020? How would you summarize 2020?
That's a good question, a brief summary. So 2020, I think, for XR has been a surprise, to be honest. I think We started with a little bit of over-optimism for how people were going to use XR on a personal basis, and then a big weight of pessimism because, you know, people weren't spending as much, and then really kind of coming back up, right? And seeing the Quest 2 change a lot of that. And we're just talking about VR. AR has a whole slew of other opportunities that we've really seen come into the fold over 2020. So I would say, you know, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster in terms of our assumptions and our feelings towards XR. But truthfully, I think that it's brought out an optimism in the market and understanding maybe 2020 isn't the year of VR, because every year we kind of say, this is the year of VR. We know that that's not the case this year now, but it has shown us that the year is not as far as I think we might have thought in the beginning of the year.
Yeah, definitely. I think in 2020, if there's any kind of, at least from our take or my personal take, is it's the year that the problems we're trying to solve for as an industry, both AR and VR, now end up being personified with a lot of individuals. You know, before we had to tell people you had an XR problem, and now here's how XR is going to solve it. And now they understand those challenges, those issues, and these problems are pervasive. Our current technologies, our current tools and applications even don't really solve for that. Even in VR, we realize there's still a long way to go before the friction comes down, before the integrations that are needed. Those are still so much more work that we have to do in that space. Were there any surprises for you this year, both pleasant and maybe not so, in terms of what things really popped off? And you mentioned kind of meetings, VR, you know, meetings in XR not really being a thing. And I know we've spoken a lot about VR, but anything in the AR space there that kind of caught your attention?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, AR is still exciting. It's accessible, you know, and I think 5G is going to help a lot, facilitate a lot in terms of AR. I'm not sure, and I'm sure there are people who will disagree with me, especially in the AR industry. But I'm not sure that I've personally seen enough come from AR outside of, you know, Pokemon Go, if you want to think of that as being part of AR, that has stood out just yet as being something that will really proliferate just, you know, for now. But I would say, you know, Niantic is doing a lot of really interesting things using the money that they're getting from Pokemon Go to make, you know, AR environments and a more like persistent AR world. That's something that I think in the future will be really exciting. For 2020, it's been a lot of experimental AR that could be really interesting, you know, coming up, and a lot of tools that are maybe not as like, you know, consumer facing, but will be able to evolve, consumer facing experiences. So, you know, it's for me, I mean, I think VR has been the piece that's been most exciting because it's been the most surprising. AR, I think, has kind of followed a trajectory that we had foreseen being the case, you know, from before, and has been a little bit more predictable, I would say, on the data side of things. But I think, like, you know, gaming is obviously something that, you know, we really see as being a huge impetus for growth for XR at large. And so, of course, Pokemon Go has been just like, you know, it's been doing gangbusters, has been, you know, outperforming itself at a time where people were really skeptical that something location-based would actually perform so well. So, you know, I see gaming as being really the exciting point for consumer VR and AR. And, you know, especially like PC gaming, we're predicting it's on track to rise year over year for, you know, PC gaming in general, but PC VR gaming. And so, you know, what we need to see more of is like AR applications that need AR, that aren't just using it because it's a sort of like novel new tool, but are really like using it to transform an experience. And I'm going to be the skeptic here. I'm not even sure like Pokemon Go does that. I think Pokemon Go without AR is just as valuable as it is with AR. But, you know, I think there are certainly ways that AR, that the work that's going into AR today will really pay off in the next year, 2 or 3 years.
Interesting comment there about Pokemon Go. I always wonder, like, what percentage of people actually leave the camera on?
Yeah.
You know, like, a lot of people probably just turn the thing off and you don't really necessarily need it. Although I guess maybe the game's evolving a bit now. They seem to be adding more capabilities or more features to it due to COVID, I think. Yeah. I mean, for AR, you know, adoption, well, you could say that everybody with a modern mobile phone has got AR, but phones are, for me, I personally see that as very short-lived experiences, you know, because of the form factor. However, I have heard a few rumblings, you know, because of COVID, there's a lot more online shopping. So perhaps a little more use there for retail and, you know, fashion and beauty market. Is that showing up in the research as well? Or?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we saw that pre-COVID as well, like particularly, as you mentioned, like beauty, the beauty market. And obviously, I mean, I don't want to discount social AR at all, right? I think social AR is really big. I mean, I use my Snap camera for like meetings all the time on my computer. So, you know, there's definitely like a really cool social element to AR that's getting people excited about it and using it. But I don't know that it's like, I think it increases as the tools increase, but I don't know that like it's become something that different from what it was pre-COVID. And, you know, based on what we're seeing in our research. But certainly I think like you're seeing so much more in the beauty market and it's getting better. And I think that's the key is the technology itself. It's like shopping for furniture still, I don't think is there. Like I always have a hard time when I'm trying to use my apps for furniture, like just to get it to ground itself. It is getting better than it was, I would say, you know, when like Amazon first started with it or Wayfair. And that's going to be the key is that it's so seamless that you use it the way you would use any other app on your phone, which is why web AR is like so important, so, so important. You know, and that's why social AR has worked so well too, is because you already have these social apps on your phone. You're already using them. It's just a matter of clicking on a filter. That's what AR has to be, right? It has to be something that you just like press a button and it works. As opposed to like downloading an app or having to do something like there's a call to action to it. But I think as these tools are getting better, you're definitely seeing consumption on a higher level. And we've always, you know, on our end, the data has always shown like social AR is just a huge piece of growing the AR landscape. So I definitely see that growth happening. But I'm not, you know, I'm more skeptical that like COVID is the cause of any of that. I think it would have happened that way regardless.
Yeah, I think the fact that we're still talking about Pokemon Go years after that it's launched kind of shows the state of, I think, a couple of things. One, what is really AR? What is its purpose? You know, we thought it was going to be games. And now we're seeing it to be more kind of more purposeful. And social is kind of interesting because that it does serve a purpose and it's also entertaining. So it's kind of that fun intersection. And I love what you said about Pokemon Go would be successful without AR. And I think that's really where that success for that product really kind of lives. What's also, I think, pretty interesting too is, you know, we talk about these use cases from AR and VR, and this is where we start to really create a split. Now there's some overlap in terms of face filters, reading your face better, especially as you're moving, right? And kind of using computer vision for a higher level of accuracy and what that can mean for avatars in VR. Where do you start to see, since AR and VR are such different technologies, we lump them into XR because they're similar, but they're also both in the growth phase. When do you think we'll start to see a split out of the category? Or are we going to lump this in together for a while, AR and VR?
A lot of it has to do with how the general public can define it. So we see a lot of nuances, right? Because we're in the middle of it. If you look to the general public to even describe, you know, we've done some research in the past asking consumers to describe what AR and VR actually are. And they're not totally sure. And so I think XR kind of evolved as a way to show consumers and the public, like, this is a new technology that's going to augment your reality in some way, whether it's putting you in a virtual world or just augmenting what you see, or a mix of both. You know, it's a way for us to, I think, translate that to general consumers. I think when it changes is when you have really standalone use cases where different people are using it in different ways, consciously, and understanding that difference themselves. So it's a lot about definitions, and I've talked about this a lot in the past, is how do we define these things in a way that's accessible to people who aren't in the industry? And so XR being sort of an umbrella term, I think, has helped people understand, like, this new technology, and that it has some, you know, connections. But I would say, like, when you have, like, a pair of Ray-Bans that are fully functional AR device, or a fully functional AR device or MR device, and people aren't thinking about it as in relation to what they do virtually in an Oculus Quest or something like that, then I think people will start to differentiate them and kind of have their own definitions and not see their pair of glasses and their headset as being the same thing. It'll be like their headset is like a computer and their glasses are glasses, you know, or something like that. But in the meantime, you know, it's still too new to really, I think, disconnect those things for folks who aren't really embedded in it.
Yeah, it's really interesting for me when I think about virtual worlds. I think pretty far out, I really want to get there. but looking at gaming too, you know, like Fortnite, having artists go into Fortnite and have, you know, audiences in the several millions or tens of millions. So I kind of wonder if the combination there, social plus an undefined thing for the consumer, it's about a connection and experience. And when people start spending time in a virtual world rather than, you know, doing FaceTime or whatever like that, maybe that'll be a good indicator that something big's going to happen. Anyway, I was very excited when you said WebAR, because I'm a big WebXR fan myself. So that's a great shout out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've always been a huge believer that's really, really necessary. Again, like, you have to make things as easy as a click of the button for people to really catch on, who aren't going to be, you know, the enthusiasts who are willing to be forgiving. People are generally, consumers are not very forgiving. You know, their Snapchat filter doesn't work or something like that, and they're like, you know,
this is,
you know, I'm going to throw this away. But it's like, there's so much that goes behind that they're not seeing, that's so complex. It doesn't matter, right? I mean, we see that in games too. Like, these really, you know, these games that take years to develop, that have all these developers super talented, come out with something great, and then there's a glitch and people just, you know, crap all over it. So yeah. I think, you know, with something like Web AR, Web XR, like, it's so important, because it's just about ease of use. People want things to be easy, and if it's not easy, then it's not worth it.
Right. The web is unstoppable, I think, and it's proven itself, so it's a natural extension. I was talking to someone a little while ago, and they were talking about search engines, and when search engines start to work well on 3D content, you know, that's another big indicator that, hey, we're adopting this. This is the thing. No one's really thinking about it. We're just getting value from it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that'll definitely be huge. I love your Fortnite example, Kirby. You know, Fortnite especially is a good example of even mediums crossing. You know, I think Travis Scott did a concert in Fortnite, and it made a lot of sense, right? You start to see people and platforms are familiar to them, with things that are different, like going to a concert and combining them. And it's a very natural and engaging experience versus kind of being, a gimmick, if you will. And I think looking at content opportunities, cross-platform opportunities, is probably a good way to start to engage more kind of the mass audience. But shifting gears a little bit, we had a lot of questions coming into this episode from some of our listeners, and one of them was from Rick, the VR for work guy, and he was asking a lot about kind of more in the business and industry, and his question was more about specific sectors increasing in 2020, and then maybe even looking forward to 2021. What does the data show in terms of what industry verticals are growing?
Yeah, so I think in 2020, we have seen, I don't want to completely discount meeting spaces, right? I do think we've seen huge strides in the technology there, and the setting up the stage for when adoption is there, people to get involved. So, you know, in terms of growth, like there's definitely some growth there. I think in education, we've also seen growth, finding ways to see even what a post-COVID world would look like, where people are comfortable learning at home and finding the tools that are going to make that as easy as possible for people to jump on, because there's a lot of great educational content out there. But I think it's a matter of, you know, obviously getting the adoption, but also, you know, making it easy to use and accessible. And we are seeing that kind of growth, especially in our data. I would say those are two spaces that we've seen growth. We've always seen manufacturing and industrial use as, solutions as a huge part of XR. And I think it's grown in line with what it was doing before. I don't know, whether COVID has changed that or not, but it's definitely a huge piece. And any kind of simulation software and technology is always at the top of the list. But certainly, we were even talking about AR, beauty and retail. So retail also seeing huge growth in that space. So I would say those are like the key highlights in terms of the data where we're seeing growth.
Yeah, I think you're right, Stephanie. I think you really hit the nail on the head in terms of other growth areas like education, collaboration. Those things are not going away. Those are real problems that this is the right medium. These are the perfect tools. I love your beauty example, because while we may eventually, of course, we will open back up, but we've learned a couple of things. One, there's just a better way to do work, whether you're going into office, whether you're traveling, whether you're not. And even when you're not, it's a huge challenge not to be in a focused environment. So we need to be able to do that. Now, we're also realizing that people when they're most collaborative, most productive, is when they're also the most happy. And that may mean working with people that are in there where they want to be. This may not be in a big metropolitan area. And so there's a bit more of an understanding now around cross collaboration across various geographies. So these are things that we've learned and we know we want to do them more. And combined with the fact that we don't necessarily know when we're going to go back to business as usual, and hopefully it's not as usual, but we have a better sense of connection with those that we collaborate with, we're going to have to figure out a way to do this. So I think the problems are definitely there. We're understanding more kind of those best practices within these technologies. There's a hardware problem that we need to solve for. There's also a lot of software opportunities that we as a community can solve for. And that's really so much of what we do with this show here, is really trying to figure out what's actually working and how can we work on those things together. I think we learned a lot in 2020, but you're with the most objective set of data. What do you think of 2021? What excites you about the next year?
Honestly, the Valve Index is really exciting. It's been limited in supply and it's, I think, got a limited base for now, but it has huge opportunity. And I think HP also is putting out an amazing headset, that those two will really find their place probably in enterprise. I think HP is definitely focusing their sights on enterprise, if I had to guess. But like seeing headsets that are coming out that are amplifying the boundaries of what VR computing can do, it excites me a lot to see what the industry will be able to build for them that will then trickle down into some of those more accessible headsets, because what you can build for those higher quality headsets now will eventually be what people are going to be able to consume on, you know, some of those other headsets. So I think that's one thing. I'm always impressed, I think, with what Facebook and Oculus are able to do in terms of accessing the consumer. And, you know, it could be really interesting what we see come out of Facebook for AR. I don't know that would be 2021, though. But, you know, there's a lot of work being done that's really getting consumer VR off the ground in a really exciting way. And a lot of that has to do with gaming. And I know, you know, it may seem biased because of my background, but I do think gaming has just been a huge, huge, huge part of consumer VR. And so seeing more AAAs and seeing more, you know, recognizable IP, that's going to have a huge influence on how VR is growing in the consumer side in 2021. And then AR, you know, I think AR, we talked about how there are things that are being developed now that in 2021 and 2022 and the next couple of years are really going to make exciting strides for how people are consuming AR. So I think there are a lot of opportunities. Those things are the things that make me excited. And yeah, I mean, I think this has been a good time during COVID to experience ways and grow on the back end the industry, so that we can start to see the fruits of that labor on the front end in the next year or two.
I'm very curious then. 2021, Apple glasses? No, yes. Everybody's waiting.
I want to say it's a year out from there. I've always said 2022, 2023. That's generally been my guesstimate, but maybe they'll prove me wrong.
Yeah, definitely still a lot to look forward to in 21. You mentioned it takes such a long time for content to get created, and we've actually seen a lot of hardware technologies launched this year. You mentioned HP. Toby has a set of eye tracking technologies. Even our previous guest with haptics. You know, we're seeing so many different hardware being launched or business models being launched. And, you know, just it'll take some time next year for those content experiences to really make its way into the market. So definitely a lot more things to look forward to. I look forward to also when it comes to AR continuing to improve, both in terms of its features, computer vision capabilities. So a lot of really cool things in 2021, as we especially look at the 2020 momentum, consistent year-over-year growth for the XR industry in the last 5 years for sure. And we continue to see that positive trend in 21. Stephanie, it's been such a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us on the show. Is there a good way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So I definitely encourage folks to go to the SuperData website, superdataresearch.com. We have on our blog, we always have our XR updates with really great nuggets of data. And you can definitely get a hold of us there. We also have an amazing tool called XR Dimensions. And that's where we house all of our data. So if you want to learn more, please get in touch. And then I'm on Twitter. And I am XR Steph on Twitter. You can definitely reach me there or on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thanks so much. And thanks so much for listening. On behalf of Kirby, Steven, Nirav, and this is Vinay, thanks for listening to XRC Pod. You can find us wherever you find your podcast or at xrcpod.com. Please remember to subscribe, share, and check you guys out next time. Thanks.